think it will. Well, John, what was the legislature like when you first experienced it?
Well, I first started, I was working for Blue Shield Blue Cross. It was Montana Physician Service and Blue Shield. And this was in 59. And they had a bill out there that would affect the Blues. And the guy who ran the Blues at that time was Samuel English. And he didn't understand the political situation very well. And he said, well, why don't you go out and nose around? And that's how I got started in the lobbying business. And that was 59, I guess. Or no, 49, I mean.
Well, 49? Okay.
Yeah, right after the war, I went to work for them. I started with Montana Physician Service. And I was to organize the doctors.
So Governor Bonner was governor?
Yes.
Holy smokes. And would you, you know, you, then you served later in the legislature,
yes,
and then
in
you
the 60s.
Lobbied. So your experience goes from 1949 to the present.
Right.
And you've got to have seen some incredible changes.
Oh, yeah.
Are there any that, if you were to kind of describe the legislature and the legislative culture and that sort of thing in the 49, 50s period, how would you describe it?
Well, first of all, it was more gentlemanly. I mean, there was more camaraderie. And I don't know whether that was because of the watering holes or, everybody said those were terrible, but it was a chance to go after the session and visit with both sides of the aisle, you know. But they don't do that anymore.
Well, you know, I got here after the watering holes, so I never really experienced those. Tell me about the watering holes.
Well, of course, you had the Montana Power, and you had even the railroad had a modified watering hole. Ty Robinson and his brother Cal, a lot of people thought it was the same guy, you know, and one legend. Maybe you don't want little stories like
that. I do, yeah.
Oh. A legislator says, my God, that Ty Robinson, he works all day out here writing bills. That was before the legislative council, you know. I mean, you got to get a lawyer, be real skilled to write a bill. In fact, when I was in the legislature, if a fellow wanted a bill on something, I'd say, well, go get a lawyer and get the bill written up. Well, anyhow, Ty would work all day off the session, and then in the evening, Cal with 10 bar at the railroad water.
Now, Cal, of course, and Ty were brothers.
Yes.
Both lawyers.
Yes.
And I think Cal, my recollection was Cal represented Pacific Power and Light Company.
Could be.
He may have also represented the Northern Pacific Railroad?
Well, it was all the railroads.
All the railroads. Yes. And Ty, of course, was a railroad lobbyist.
Oh, yes. He was with the Milwaukee.
The Milwaukee. And so they had a watering hole, which was like a hospitality room, right?
In the Placer Hotel. Most of them had their rooms in the Placer Hotel. In fact, when I got elected, somebody said, I suppose you're going to live at the Placer. And I said, why? And they said, well, they have those transoms where they throw the money over. And I said, all I got at the Placer was the flu. I didn't get any.
And the Robinson brothers were both smart attorneys who also, in addition to being lobbyists, helped legislators write bills.
Yes. A lot of bills were written at the Placer and at the bar at the Montana Club.
I see.
There isn't the camaraderie anymore, and I think that's bad.
Yeah.
There's just something about communications that I think we're lacking here today.
Kind of give me a feel or an impression of a watering hole. You mentioned that the Milwaukee or the railroads?
Oh, no, all of them.
All of them together had
the Northern Pacific, the Great Northern, we had seven railroads when I joined the Railroad Association. Jim Hoy was representing the Northern Pacific, No Golf, the Great Northern, Ty Robinson, Milwaukee, and from Butte, Bob Corrett represented the Union Pacific. And they paid according to trackage, number of miles.
Yeah.
That's the way I got paid.
I see. And you represented the umbrella group, the association
group. Yeah.
So the association was the sponsor of the watering hole.
Yeah.
And so the watering hole would be just like a suite of rooms at the Placer?
Oh, one big room.
Just one big room.
Yeah. Well, they had a bedroom off to one side there where, like, whoever was running the water hole that night could go to bed.
And the water hole would be a place where you could get a cocktail, you could have a cold cut, like a...
A sandwich. A
sandwich of some kind or other.
Yeah.
And just sit down in the soft chair and visit.
Yeah. The Butte guys were in there every night. And then they'd vote against the Anaconda Company or the railroads the next day. You know, I mean, it didn't have any influence on their voting.
Why do you suppose these watering holes were a sort of a part of the Montana tradition? Why do you suppose they got started, and why did they continue?
Well, they got started so you could get to know everybody. I mean,
how did that serve the interest of the railroads and the Montana Power Company and Anaconda
Company? Well, the ability to communicate to legislators.
I see.
When I took that railroad job, they told me to be on the road half the time, going around towns and visiting. And of course, in those days, if you were elected senator from whatever county, you were there years. I mean,
sure, before term limitations.
Yeah.
Did lobbying take place in the watering holes?
Well, yes. I mean, it was an informational thing because, like the Butte guys, they would just vote no on bills anyhow.
But you might discuss anything. I mean, you might discuss legislation,
yeah.
You might discuss baseball.
Well, yeah, but as I recall, we discussed the legislature mostly.
Yeah. John, when you think back over your long history of involvement in Montana state politics, is there a particular lobbyist or maybe a couple of lobbyists that kind of stand out in your mind?
Well, of course, when I was in the legislature, I thought Ty Robinson was probably he knew everybody, and if I'd go to him and say I need a bill on such and such, he says, well, let's draft it, you know. He'd help you out drafting the bill. And I ponied up a lot of bills that I never put in, you know, several.
What do you mean, ponied up?
Well, like the truckers were giving the railroads hell one session. So ponied up a bill that said that the semis and the big trucks couldn't run on weekends or holidays. And old guy that lobbied for the truckers, he about had a heart failure. And of course, I never put the bill in, but I'd get it circulated around, you know.
Just for psychological reasons,
yeah.
Huh? I see. What was it that...
Eccles was his
name. Leonard Eccles.
Leonard
Eccles. I've heard him spoken of. He preceded me also, but I heard him spoken of. In fact, I think he was a friend of Tim Babcock's.
Oh, yes.
Because
Tim... they were both truckers.
Both were truckers, yeah, sure. What was there about Ty Robinson made him memorable? His great competence and his...
Yes.
He was very effective, obviously.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And he went out of his way to help you.
Yeah.
Hoy was a good lobbyist.
Now, Hoy was a lobbyist before he became a legislator?
No, I think he was in the legislature first.
I see. Yeah.
He was a senator.
Yeah, from Billings, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Crowley firm. I went to him on that Tau bill, T to house all those sports, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, I wanted to vote no on it. I didn't think...
This is when you were a legislator.
Yeah. I didn't think we should house those and carry insurance and carry maintenance man and everything. And Tower, the old man, was pretty loose in saying the state would eventually own those forts. See. Well, Hoy says, put that in writing to Tau.
Now this is Edward Tau.
Yeah,
the banker
man.
And the father of Tom Tau, who was the legislator.
And of course he wouldn't put it in writing. The way it happened was just what Hoy said it would be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. One example.
Do you remember Al Doherty?
Oh, sure. He must have represented 15 outfits.
Yeah.
He had a sauna at his house. And he'd take them out there, wine and dine them, and dunk them in the pool. And he was very effective.
I first met him when I was a young freshman legislator, and he came to Kalispell, and I got a telephone call, I believe, from Con Lundgren, who was also, as you know, a legislator.
He was a nice guy.
Real nice guy. And he said, Bob, there's a fellow that has invited us to dinner, the delegation here locally. And so if you'd like to, why don't you meet us this evening at the Outlaw Inn, what was before it was the Outlaw Inn. It was called Hennessy's at the time.
Yeah.
So I arrived there, and there was Matt Himsel and I believe Jim Murphy and Con Lundgren, perhaps. Maybe somebody else, I don't remember for sure. And
Browder?
Probably Broder,
yeah.
And I arrived there, and this fellow who I'd never met before, Al Doherty, stood up, and he extended his hand to me, and he said, Bob, Al Doherty, beer, milk, cable TV, and chiropractors.
Yeah.
And that didn't mean anything to me. I thought, gosh, I can't imagine that's what we're having for dinner, you know. I mean, I didn't know what he meant. And so I kind of shook hands with him and sat down, and then it developed that he was a lobbyist for those groups. And as a young legislator, for some reason or other, I didn't even hardly understand what he meant when he introduced himself to me. But he struck me as a sort of a colorful, high-profile character.
Yes, like an old railroad lobbyist. They said the old railroad lobbyist, all he had to know was the three Bs, booze, broads, and bribes. But Al Doherty's fame was, and they don't give her credit, was his wife.
Really?
She wrote those news articles, you know, and send them out to the legislators.
What did he do? Did Doherty and his wife circulate a newsletter among legislators?
No. The chiropractors. Oh. They'd put out a newsletter like we were in the middle of a session and there's a crisis, you know. I mean, he wanted to keep his clients on their toes.
Huh.
Right.
So who got the newsletter?
All the legislators and, of course, his clients.
Was it a general newsletter on the legislative session? I mean, it wasn't just specific to chiropractors.
It wasn't during the legislative
session.
I mean, in the interim, he'd get out a letter that sounded like, there was a crisis coming up.
I see.
She was very talented.
When you think back, was there a particular legislator or two in your experience that especially stand out in your mind?
Well, I always thought the world of Lucas.
Jim Lucas, the Speaker of the House from Miles City.
We call him the silver-tongued Greek. He really was good on his feet. He's smart. He's an attorney. I don't mean you have to be an attorney to be smart, but I thought he was very good.
Why?
Well, he would do a lot of studying, and he knew about the bills and their content, and when he got up to speak, people listened. And that was what I always looked for, were they listening, both sides of the aisle. My recollection is that they always listened to Lucas, both sides.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Of course there's others.
Yeah. Any Democrat pops in your mind that's especially memorable, or?
There were some good Democrats when I served, and as I say, I got together with a Democrat and wrote that Fish and Game Sportsman's Bill. You know.
Now, what was that? I guess I don't know about that.
Well, it was put in years ago. You buy it. It's a sportsman. They only put out 500 licenses, and mine's number 3. Dunkel was in charge of Fish and Game then.
And Frank Dunkel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
who was later a state senator, and who was later?
Well, he ran for governor.
Ran for governor, and then he had some high-level federal appointment, I think.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And I was there when they offered it to him at a meeting in Denver. Yeah. But
what was the bill?
Well, you buy a sportsman's license, and that entitles you to hunt anything.
I see.
Or it's a special license, and there's a pad in there for extra money for the Fish and Game to develop fishing sites and
I see.
Stuff like that, and never got much publicity. It was quite expensive for one thing. You know, most guys, they buy a fishing license when they're going fishing, and if they want to shoot an antelope, they just buy an antelope tag. You know, but this license, you could even get a bear on this license.
You bag a grizzly, huh?
And I have number 3.
Really?
Yeah.
Dunkel had number 1?
No, he got number 2. And the governor got number 1.
And the governor at the time was?
God, I think it was
Babcock.
Judge.
Oh, Judge, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember who the Democrat was you teamed with on that?
Yes. He was from Glasgow.
Bob Cotton?
No. Nice guy, real nice guy. God,
no, I'm thinking Jerry Fita, Lou Perry were up in that country, but they're Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
When you think, you know, you've mentioned Jim Lucas, and of course I know him too, and he's a wonderfully bright and charming and capable person, and he remains very active in his community and in the practice of law and that sort of thing. As you think back, though, there must be another legislator or two that kind of cross your mind as particularly memorable. And I don't necessarily mean because they were, you know, comparable to Jim Lucas. Maybe you remember legislators for another reason.
Well, I'm sorry. I should get my old notes out. And if you want me to, I will think about that and look through my notes and then let you know.
Sure, I could just give you a couple of examples.
Okay.
What do you remember about Fred Broder?
Well, of course, I liked the world of him.
Yeah.
He was very solid, he didn't get up on a whole bunch of bills.
Fred Broder was a representative and senator from Flathead County.
Yes. And if he said something about the timber industry, that's the way it was.
He owned a sawmill in the Flathead Valley.
I had great respect for him, and then after he retired, he went down to South America and helped people set up sawmills down there.
Yeah. Tom Tao. We talked about
his father. Well, he's smarter than hell, but I just he puts in too many bills. He's too liberal. You know, like this year, over 2,000 requests. Well, our state isn't in that kind of shape where we need 2,000 bills.
Well, that's for sure. John, the 1972 Constitution brought some major changes. When you served in the legislature, it was under the 1889 Constitution. Then, of course, you've been a lobbyist, both under the 1889 Constitution and the 1972 Constitution. Any thoughts or observations on the change that the new Constitution has brought?
Well, of course, there was a lot of complaining about it, and it was kind of funny. I approached that lady from Glendive who was in the Constitutional Convention, and I was talking to her about railroad matters, and I don't know, somebody walked by and said, "Oh, John, how's the railroad going?" or something like that. She says, "Are you a lobbyist?" And I said, "Yes." "Oh, well, I can't talk to you then."
So you also lobbied the Constitutional Convention, the 1972 Constitution for the railroads.
Yeah.
And in the process of lobbying this particular convention delegate, you just were having a conversation with her.
She just ended it.
When she learned that you were a lobbyist, she just ended it, which means she'd been given an impression that lobbyists were wrong and bad.
Well, it's kind of like our present governor. If you're a lobbyist, you're nothing.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I think it's crazy.
Yeah. Because lobbyists earn a we'll explain why do you think that's wrong?
John Kennedy himself, when he was president, he says the best way to know about a bill is to get the lobbyists from both sides and visit with them.
Mm-hmm.
He says they have a lot of knowledge.
Sure.
And if you can't trust them, we don't talk to them anymore.
Sure.
You know, I mean. No, I could tell you a little. They went around the room in school when my daughter was not very old. They asked each student, "What does your dad do?" And she didn't want to tell them that I was a lobbyist. So she said, "He works for the railroad." And the teacher said, how does he work for the railroad? And, you know, finally she said, "Well, he's a lobbyist." So even my daughter I hadn't convinced.
And this was clear back in the 60s, probably.
Yeah, oh yeah.
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 The 1889 Constitution allowed executive sessions of legislative committees to be closed.
Yes.
So when a committee, after it had heard the testimony on the bill and had say several bills it had heard testimony on and was ready to take action on the bills, if the committee chairman wanted to, he could excuse everyone from the from the session. He could allow people to remain there as he chose before he took action on the bill. The 1972 Constitution says that any time an action can be taken on legislation, the meeting's got to be open.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's crazy. It's just like the people that want the Supreme Court open on all meetings that they, you know, I used to quiz Turnage on that, and he said, "Well, there are some things, you know, some of the people play for the press. I mean, if they start inviting TV people, radio people, media, why, you're going to get a different twist on a lot of things." And I just think there has to be, I mean, you can overdo this privacy thing, but for like our newspapers suing that they want the file opened on so-and-so, well, the judge put that information aside for a purpose, and I think it's wrong.
So you feel that the closed, were the closed committee hearings, I don't mean it to say the hearings, but I mean the closed executive sessions in the committee, were they, how would you describe them? Were they better than the system since then, or just no harm done, or how would you describe them?
Well,
you were a legislator, the 67 and 69 sessions?
I was elected to 69, but I took a job over at the university to run the alumni office in 69.
I see.
So I was 67 and 65.
You served in the House of Representatives in 65 and 67?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I just have a different thought on the secrecy thing.
You don't see that any harm was done that you can recall when the executive sessions were closed.
No, when you have the press there, it's a different hearing.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I think there's places and times for not letting everybody in and then getting a biased story in the newspaper the next day.
Sure. Tell me now, too, because you mentioned that early on there was more camaraderie and more friendship and so on in the legislature. Do you think term limitations have affected that?
Oh, very much. You got a whole new bunch out there. They don't want to hear what went on 10 years ago or 15 or 20. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not bothered by prior experiences.
And how do you think that affects the relationship between legislators? How do you think term limitations affects the...
Well, there's some bills put in that if the legislator had any background at all, he wouldn't have put the bill in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of those.
Do you think it affects... Do you think they perhaps knew each other better before term limitations?
Yeah. Hell, I used to go across the aisle and visit all the time.
When I think of the old time legislature, I got in right on the tail end of the mock sessions.
Yeah.
But you probably remember those.
Yeah.
Tell me about those.
Well, I can't remember that much about them.
Lobbyists played the parts of legislators in a kind of a funny mock session that was just sort of a kind of a lighthearted evening.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the truth, I never participated in any of those.
I see.
I'd always been there for business. It used to irritate me when a little group would come over from Ecolac or somewhere and we'd close the session down and I'd listen to them for 40 minutes. I just wanted to have business.
John, there's a legislator, or rather a lobbyist that I met. Actually, he was a legislator one time, too, years ago, who was a fascinating, interesting character, and I just wanted to know if you remembered him. I don't remember how prominently involved he was. I think he was, though, in the 50s and 60s. A fellow by the name of Boo McGilvra.
Oh, sure, Boo. Yeah, he's the one that worked on me on the Talk Ford collection.
Okay. Now, he lobbied for Montana Power Company, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, Boo was quite a guy. And I was going to vote no on those cars, and Boo worked me over, and then he worked one of my board members over, Lou Goff, and convinced him that I should vote for the bill.
Did he ever tell you the baking powder biscuit story?
I don't remember that.
That was kind of a trademark story of his.
Oh, and I kind of remember.
It was a funny story, too, I remember. Did you ever know Governor Aronson?
Oh, very well. He appointed me to the Girls' School Board of Directors when they were out here in the valley, for one thing. He called me one day, and I was state president of the JCs, or had been. And he says, Yanni, he says, the JCs in Canada want me to come up to Calgary and give a talk. He says, but I'm afraid to leave the state. He's, you know, Paul Cannon
was the lieutenant governor.
Yeah, and he figured that Paul would make a lot of appointments while he was up there at the JC meeting. So he says, will you go up and talk to him instead of me? So I did.
Oh, great.
They gave me some spurs.
Oh, really? So you knew him personally?
Yes.
How would you describe him?
Well, he's the kind of guy I like, you know. I mean, I had him speak at Kiwanis one time, and somebody said, how many people work for state government? This is an old one. You know. He says, about half of them.
So he was would you describe him as common, genuine, down to earth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not dishonest in any way. I thought the world of him.
Did you know Governor Nutter?
Oh, very well. Went hunting with him. And in fact, the night...
How did you become acquainted with him?
Well, in the legislature, and then he became a member of our hunting group.
Oh, that's your SASH group?
Mm-hmm.
And what does SASH stand for?
Society of American Statesmen and Huntsmen.
And so that was a group of legislators or former legislators that got together at the hunting cabin of Don Valentin, I think. Uh-huh.
In Everett Shoey,
and that was over in the Ovando area.
And we met for 43 years. I think it was 43.
And that group included Don Nutter and Gene Turnage.
Yes.
Jim Hoy.
Well, if you want to wait a minute, I'll go upstairs and get you a roster.
I'd be interested to see that. Okay. But let's not do it now. But no. I'd be interested to see that. But for the most part, these fellas met for a long weekend, and they did some hunting and just had a good social time together.
Yes.
And so Nutter was a part of that group.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he didn't, just for a few, you know, his term didn't last that long.
Yeah. He was only governor for about a year, I think.
Yeah, the night he died, I was at a JC meeting, and I was sitting next to General Mitchell.
Who was General Mitchell?
He was
Commandant of the Montana National Guard, or?
Yeah. Pendergrass?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah.
And a fella came in and whispered in his ear, and he whispered in mine, said, Governor Nutter crashed and died. So he left right away, Mitchell. So I knew it.
Oh, you were one of the first people to know about it.
Yeah.
How would you describe Nutter personally?
Well, I liked the way he legislated. He was all business.
He was a state senator from Sydney.
Yeah.
Prior to being elected governor.
He was smart. Very. I suppose things went on. I was probably pretty naive, but seems to me there's more stuff goes on now than when I started.
If I asked you in a sentence or two to describe Governor Aronson, how would you describe him?
Well, I remember his stories. He came out on a train, got off the train, he did manual labor jobs in the oil fields, and there's a good story about him. He was with a crew that was carrying planks to a project. Have you heard this one?
Go ahead and tell me.
And most guys were carrying just one plank. Aronson carried two, and he had two on his shoulder, and the supervisor said, hey, Aronson, take five. And he says, my God, he says, I nearly lift two.
and the guy realized he was carrying two and working hard, and he said, take a break.
Take five.
Take 5 minutes off. Yeah, well, so he was a big, strong man.
Oh, yes.
And that was a story he liked to tell.
Yes.
Tell me now, if you could just describe briefly Governor Nutter.
Well, I just thought he was a smart, no-nonsense legislator, and I thought he would go far in the political field. I mean, probably to the Potomac, you know, as a senator.
How about Governor Babcock?
Of course, he took over, you know, Tim's been a good hand. Of course, he's been a lobbyist, you know.
Sure.
That's bad word. I think he's done a good job. Certainly, between the two of them, they've done a lot for the state.
Sure.
In various fundraising.
Have you had any personal experiences with Governor Babcock? I mean, it would help.
Not very much.
Don't really know him intimately. But you, of course, you've known him casually for.
Oh, yeah, for years.
For many, many years.
Yeah. I first met him in the JCs.
I see.
When he was from Miles City.
He was a young legislator from Miles City, then he was also a legislator from Billings before he was elected lieutenant governor.
I kind of forget the time in there, but he was a good legislator, yeah.
How do you suppose he and Nutter got teamed up to run for governor and lieutenant governor?
I often wondered about it.
Why is that?
Well, I...
That seemed like an unusual combination?
Yes. Yeah. Kind of like the one we got now.
Why did it seem unusual?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I expected Nutter to select to run with it. I think Babcock's name recognition was good, and I really don't know. I mean, I never got into that heavy.
Did they have contrasting personalities, or?
No. I don't know how another picked.
Because they ran as a team. I mean, yes. Even though they constitutionally didn't have to, I know they ran as a team, both in the primary and in the general election.
Yeah.
Then Governor Babcock was replaced by Governor Anderson. If I asked you to describe him.
Forrest?
Yeah.
He was a fraternity brother.
He was a fraternity brother of yours at the University of Montana?
Yeah.
At the same time?
Oh, no.
He's
when
older.
He went to school.
Yeah, he's older than you, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 So well, you didn't know him in college?
No, I did not. He was different.
Which fraternity house, by the way?
Phi Delta.
I see. Okay. Phi Delta Theta?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. At the University of Montana.
They have since folded up.
Uh-oh. And what were you going to tell me about him?
Well, he was different to deal with. I wouldn't want to tell you all the stories that I know. We made some deals when I worked with the railroad.
When you were a lobbyist for the railroad, you had some dealings with Governor Anderson? Or Governor Anderson?
Yeah, but some of the higher-ups in the railroad did.
I see.
To get easements to build a railroad, for example, down at Coldstream and things like that.
And so that was in his capacity as a member of the state land board, perhaps? Were?
Oh, no, he knew who to contact.
Like for private landowners?
Yeah.
In order to get easements across ranch property and that sort of thing? I see, okay. I see. In the there's some question in your mind maybe about his personal honesty?
Well, yeah, but you knew how he stood. I mean, he made it real plain. When I worked for the university, here's a guy that was a legislator, a Supreme Court, and a governor. And I thought he should be recognized, and I put him in for some awards there at the university, and none of them went through. Committee. Anyhow, they didn't agree with me, and I. Because I think when a guy gets to be governor, he's due some respect.
Well, sure.
I don't care what his name is.
Yeah. So you proposed Governor Anderson for an honor at the University of Montana, but the committee or whomever chose not to give it to him?
Yeah.
Was this after he had been governor?
Yes.
Why do you suppose they made that decision?
Well, there were a lot of stories that were circulating. I'd rather not.
Okay. What are your impressions of, what do you remember about, or did you, I think you served in the legislature here from Silverville, or rather from Lewis and Clark County at the same time with Governor Judge.
Yes.
So you probably knew him pretty well.
Yes.
Well, tell me about him.
Well, I we ran countywide then.
Yeah.
It wasn't, so I'd go to those dinners up at the church in Augusta and things like that. Judge's mother campaigned, I think, harder than Tommy did.
Blanche Judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd get up at the church meeting. I'll help on the dishes tonight. You know, wash dishes. And somebody next to me said, are you going to help on the dishes? I said, no, I didn't come up here to wash dishes. They were hard to beat, those but I did get more votes one time than Judge.
Uh-huh. He was very young, wasn't he, then?
Oh, yes. Life. And in fact, he had not been a resident of Montana long enough, really. And I remember some of the old hands, he'd say, oh, let the kid run, or let, you know, we know her look a few months.
So he'd lived out of state.
Well, he'd been to school.
Been to college out of state.
Notre Dame.
And he'd returned to Montana.
To run.
And he wanted to run for the legislature, and there was some question about whether he quite met the residency requirement.
Yeah.
But it turned out he did run, and he was elected.
Yes.
How would you describe him? I mean, if you were, was he, what kind of a guy was he? Was he, I'm sure he was personable.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, I'm not a way-out liberal, as you probably have figured out. And one time he put a bill in that every cat should have a house.
Every cat?
Yeah. Kitten, cat. And so John Pierce from Billings.
Representative John Pierce, Republican from Billings.
Yeah, he'd been there forever. So they called him Cat House Judge.
And he was concerned about stray cats.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other bill or bills that he was associated with?
Oh, he had a lot of, like the food stamps. He was always trying to get more people eligible for food stamps. And I thought we should be trying to get people off of food stamps. You know, that's just two different ways of thinking.
How do you remember him as governor?
Well, he wasn't outstanding, but he didn't do too many things. He was too liberal for me, but...
He didn't make a strong impression, is that what you're saying? Didn't really make a strong impression one way or another?
Yeah. Kind of like Bonner.
How would you describe Bonner?
Well, just don't make any waves.
I see.
I had a bill in, a guy from Townsend wanted to change the name of the lake from Canyon Ferry to Lake Townsend. And I thought, well, what, you know, won't be any problem with that. So I put, Jesus, even Bonner talked to me about that. I had to backwater on that one.
Is there a, because I hadn't even thought to ask you about Governor Bonner, but is there a governor of Montana that maybe of all the governors, because of course you've had experience with Bonner, with Aronson, with Nutter, with Babcock, with...
Well, I thought Nutter would go the farther. I thought he had the qualities to, an ability to speak, on bills and knowledge, and I guess he made more impression. Roscoe impressed me very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it about Roscoe that impressed you?
Well, I couldn't believe the vocabulary of that guy. I mean, I've never heard it.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought he was great.
Inspirational speaker.
Yeah, oh my. I've never heard anybody like
How about any impressions of Governor Schwinden?
Yeah, I thought he did a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had some good people helping him. I thought Governor Schwinden did a good job on the whole.
In the process...
You gotta weigh the good with the bad.
Sure, yeah.
So many people in Montana say, well, he voted for such and such, so he's no... Well, you can't just take one. But it seems like we have more single-shot deals now than, you know, abortion and some things shouldn't even be political.
Yeah, but they become center stage in the political process. And they attract a lot of attention.
Yes.
So Schwinden was someone who you felt was somewhat more moderate and practical, perhaps.
Yes, very practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that would contrast him, say, a little bit with who? Governor Judge?
Yeah.
Who you felt was a little more of a philosophical liberal?
Yeah.
I see. In the course of your involvement in the politics of Montana, I think historians are going to look at the importance of the decline of the influence of the Anaconda Company. In early Montana history, you know, back at the turn of the century, the turn of the last century, and up through the 20s and 30s and 40s, and I wasn't here then, but I understand the impression was that the Anaconda Company owned the newspapers, with the exception of the Great Falls Tribune, and they had a very large influence in our state economically and politically and so forth. And then you were kind of here in the waning time of that. You kind of watched the sunset on the Anaconda Company.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Any thoughts or impressions or...
I'm glad you brought that up. I thought the papers were run pretty good when the Anaconda... I knew they had people over there in Butte, and you could talk to them. And
who were they?
Mr. Riskin and... I can't think of the other guy's name, but they were... I talked to Mr. Riskin quite a few times.
And he was a publisher of the Montana Standard in Butte?
Well, he was overall in the newspapers. I mean,
and he was associated with the Anaconda Company, or
yeah,
an officer in the Anaconda
yeah.
Company. I see.
But I'm glad you brought that up. I personally think the media pretty much did Judy Martz in. I mean, here the other day, they got a picture of our new governor with a map of Montana, and he predicts we're going to have drought this summer. Well, whenever he opens a map or whatever, he invites the press in and the cameras and so on. Martz said we were going to have a drought. Sir. What? That's no big deal.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
There's no... in fact, I told the dean of the journalism school that I thought that the press had done Judy in. And, of course, he didn't agree.
What was it about the press when the Anaconda Company ran it? I mean, with the... You know, it's been criticized. Ross Toole is the historian who I think has really made war on the Anaconda Company ownership of the newspapers, and indicated that Montana was the only state in the nation that didn't have a free press. We had a captive press, that it was unhealthy for one economic interest to have the controlling interest that they had
in
the newspapers.
Oh, that's what we got now.
Same thing now.
Same thing now.
Because the Anaconda Company sold its papers to the
Lee
newspapers, and so...
Your
feeling is our press is as controlled now as it was then.
Well, I think you've got the same situation. And
except
if you check...
Now there's a different bias, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you check the people who are running the various papers, the dailies, they're very liberal. They're of the wrong party. And...
When the Anaconda Company owned the newspapers, there was a different philosophical point of view then, less liberal.
Yeah. But, of course, you didn't have news written up then like you have now. You know, I mean, somebody's suing somebody because they touched her on the rump or something like that. You know, they didn't run stuff like that.
John, in addition to the newspapers, do you have any other thoughts and impressions on the Anaconda Company as an influence in Montana? Did you have any experience with the Anaconda Company?
Yeah. Being a lobbyist for the railroads, well, of course, we not worked together, but touched base.
How did you do that?
Denny Shea.
Who was Denny Shea?
Yeah, Denny Shea.
I've heard of Denny Shea, but I never knew him.
And Crippen. And
I knew Lloyd Crippen. But Denny Shea was a lobbyist for the Anaconda Company.
Yes.
How did you work with Lloyd Crippen and Denny Shea?
He was a former legislator.
Shea was?
Yes. He could take shorthand, which I thought was, man, that's valuable. You know, go to a meeting, he'd be taking stuff done shorthanded. But he was essentially a labor guy. And he got along good with labor and, of course, with the Anaconda Company. But
his background had been as a Democrat legislator and a labor union member.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose he frequently contacted Democratic legislators in the process of his lobbying for the Anaconda Company.
But he was the kind of a guy that talked to both sides of the aisle. He had more talking to both sides of the aisle most days. It's a different ball game now.
And then, do you remember Al Wilkinson?
Oh, sure.
And Al Wilkinson was basically the head lobbyist for the Anaconda Company. How would you describe him?
Well, I didn't know him that well, but he made decisions, and of course, Crippen and Shea did what they were told.
Do you feel that the Anaconda Company, represented by this fellow Riskin, who you mentioned, you know, had a lot of influence with the newspapers in the state, and by Wilkinson here in the legislature, and perhaps also through Denny Shea and Lloyd Crippen, do you feel that they had a great influence in Montana's politics?
Yeah. But I'll tell you this, on the other side, the Anaconda Company paid well. And they did a lot of good in this state that people have forgotten. They were building parks, and hell, they even built a trap shooting range in the city of Anaconda. And I had a Catholic priest tell me that he probably wouldn't be here today if his mother had not had a job in that cafe in Anaconda, and they let her take grub home at night. And that's what fed a big family. No, her husband had died. But he told me that people forget the good that the company did.
So you think maybe some of the history's been left out in terms of characterizing the Anaconda Company?
Yes.
And how would you describe the Anaconda Company? How do you think of the Anaconda
Company?
They
provided a lot of damn good paying jobs. And people wonder why we're 50th and everything. Well, hell, you haven't got anybody cutting trees anymore. You haven't got any mining anymore. You know, it's just the earthies have taken over.
And in terms of the influence of the Anaconda Company in the legislature, certainly if they had big influence, they could probably have some influence on bills pertaining to education and highways and other things. And I think where I hear you coming from here is that you feel that their influence was an important one, perhaps was a benign one, that they didn't necessarily try to...
Yeah.
They wanted, would you say they wanted an adequately funded university system in Montana? Or,
yeah.
And so... You know, that I guess I don't want to put words in your mouth, John, but it sounds as though your impression of them was that they weren't they were an important influence, but not necessarily a negative and heavy-handed one.
Yeah, right.
Did you
had a lot of independent legislators even in those states. I mean, the East End, they didn't, of our state, they didn't. Well, sure, they got to know Denny Shea and Crippen, but. My God, they had 6,000 miners at one time.
Yeah.
And good paying jobs, put people through school, college. Sure, I know, but anytime you got an outfit that big, you're going to have some things that people think they did wrong. But, I don't know, I just, we don't have it anymore.
We don't have the job base anymore that
That's
we had
right.
to associate with the with when the Anaconda Company was in its heyday.
Same with the railroad. We had, I don't know, 3,000 employees, and I don't know how many we got now, but several hundred.
So Montana's economy is really in a transition now. It's going away from...
And they keep talking about bring them out here and let them fish. Well, that isn't a paying deal like the Anaconda Company.
Is there anything that you'd like to... We're getting near the end of our tape here. Is there anything that you'd like to say, anything that maybe I should have touched on more in the questions I've asked, that it kind of helped?
I'm glad you brought up the press thing. And you had to know John Pierce from Billings.
I did know John Pierce. He died when my first session in the legislature was 1971, and we had an impasse on the sales tax during the 1971 legislative session. We put in some grueling, tough days. That was under the old Constitution where the legislature met for 60 days, 60 calendar days. So that even included weekends. And we worked for something like 37 days straight, I think, at one point. And John Pierce died. He was one of three legislators that died during that session. There was a fellow named Ben Brownfield in the Senate who died during that session. And you probably served with him. There was a fellow named Jack Fitzgerald from down in the Bitterroot that died during that session. And John Pierce died during that session. Yeah. But what were you going to tell me about John Pierce?
Well, the Republicans, I don't mean the Republicans are all the good guys. They put up a bill one time to attack the Anaconda Company, tax-wise. And I didn't think it was fair.
Pierce was one of the guys who did that?
No. Pierce and I voted no on the bill.
Who do you remember were the legislators, the Republican legislators who were behind the bill?
Well, Felt was the big one.
Jim
and
Felt.
He was Speaker of the House.
And from Billings.
Yeah, so the next day Pierce shows up with a necktie, and he has a stone about that size.
Large stone on his necktie.
Yeah, well, it looked like a diamond, but you know. And he says, I voted right on that Anaconda bill.
Joking that he'd been given this big diamond for his vote on the bill.
I got a picture of that.
Why do you suppose Felt was...
Well, he thought they weren't paying enough taxes, and by God, he was going to get them.
And the bill failed?
Oh, yeah.
Even though Felt was Speaker of the House?
Yeah.
But he got a fair amount of Republican support for it in the House?
Oh, yeah.
Did some Democrats vote against it?
As I recall, they did. The bill didn't go very far, and of course, we caught hell, Pierce and I. Pierce, that was water off a duck's back, you know, to him getting crisp. I took it a little hard. But, I didn't think it was fair.
Sure.
And I don't know. I thought I was there for the whole state.
Do you remember, and I know this is an old memory, John, but Jim Lucas was a legislator then with you at that time.
Yes.
Would you have any idea how he might have voted on that same legislation?
Well, he must have voted for it because there were just two Republicans voted against.
Oh, I see. So it must have passed the House then.
Yeah. But I don't know what happened to it. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Might have died in the Senate?
You know, in those days we had, one thing I forgot was the People's Voice.
Yeah, Harry and Gretchen Billings were the editors of the People's Voice, which was a liberal newspaper.
Oh my God, yes.
Well,
they raided us all at the end of the year. And I got a little book where they raided. And I called Hank Hibbert up. I said, you and Judge got a pretty good rating from the People's Voice. And he said, what do you mean, me and Judge? And I said, well, you add the two together. You got a 6, and he got a 94. So you add those together, that's pretty good rating.
Now, Hank Hibbert was the state senator from Lewis and Clark County.
I think he was in the House.
House and Senate, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was somehow related to our current Senator Max Baucus, I believe.
Oh, yes. Oh, the Hibberts and the
Baucus.
Sure, the Seaman.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he was Max's in-law of some kind, or blood relative of some kind. Yeah.
That's a long story.
Yeah. What story?
Huh? Oh, about the big Seaman Ranch.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Senator Baucus has owned a share of that. I think he sold it recently.
He sold it.
Yeah.
For several reasons.
Is there anything?
Oh, well, it gets into a marriage and everything.
I see. All right. Okay. Well, anything else you want to say?
No, I can't. Oh, there's a lot of little stories and stuff, but it's still a pretty good process, and all you need is good people to have good legislation.
That's right. So you're a believer in the process, certainly, and you've devoted your life to it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, I sure appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure.
I think I didn't make it clear on the tape, but you're John Delano, and as we've discussed, served both as a legislator and a lobbyist. And really pleased that you've taken this time, John. Thank you.
Are we off now?